Okay. So, thanks, Sean, and thanks to the organizers for being here. So I'm going to present to try to present to you a view of brain worlds, which is the point of view of a cosmologist. So it might be quite different from the point of view of many of you here, but I think it might be fruitful to try to make a connection between the two point of view. So from a cosmologist's point of view, the idea is to simplify as much as possible the model so that you can do realistic cosmology. So to consider any kind of matter in our universe, for example. So as you will see, the model I'm going to use is really a very simple toy model. So this is the outline of my talk. So I'm going to skip the first point. I'm going to jump directly to brain cosmology, so how to do cosmology in the context of brain world. So the idea will be extremely simple. So the basic idea is that our universe will be considered as being a brain, which means a submanifold which is embedded in a higher dimensional space-time. And I'm going to consider the case of self-gravitating brains. I'm going to study the influence of the matter in the brain on the geometry inside the brain and outside the brain, in the bulk. And I'm also going to restrict to the case of five-dimensional bulk space-time, which means I have a codimension one problem. And this is much simpler in terms of general relativity because you can use the junction condition, the so-called Israel junction conditions, and you can do easily cosmology. If you don't have a codimension one problem, this is much more complicated because you must take into account the internal structure of the brain in order to study cosmology. So I will, and since all the visible universe seems to be three-dimensional, I add one extra dimension and I'm going to consider a five-dimensional bulk space-time. So as I'm going to try to show you, in such a very simple setting, there are modifications of the homogeneous cosmology, and one modification comes from an effect at high energy. So there will be a modified Friedmann equation at high energy, and there is also another modification as far as homogeneous cosmology is concerned, which is the effect of the bulk inside the brain, which appears in the form of what is usually called dark radiation. Okay, so how to do cosmology in such a setting? So this is the starting point. Starting point is very simple. Since we do homogeneous cosmology, we are going to assume homogeneity and isotropy as usual in the three ordinary spatial dimensions. So here we have an extra spatial dimension, and of course we are not going to assume that it is homogeneous in the extra dimension, otherwise we cannot have a brain. But we still maintain homogeneity and isotropy along three spatial dimensions. So this means that all quantities will depend on time and on the extra dimension. So I choose a coordinate which I call y for the extra dimension. So quite generally, the five-dimensional metric can be written in this form. So you can see immediately that this is the obvious generalization of the Friedmann-Robertson-Walker metric, except that here I have an extra dimension, so dy squared. And here my metric coefficient depends not only on time, on the cosmological time, but also on the extra dimension y. So it's always possible locally to make a change of coordinates so that this coefficient here is 1, and this is called the Gaussian normal coordinate. And here I will also assume that the brain is located at y equals 0.
Why do you assume that all of the surfaces are constant y?
Okay, so this is, I mean, this is the assumption that somehow the homogeneity and isotropy in our brain, in our universe, is also verified in the other slices which are parallel to our brain.
So that's an assumption.
I mean, this is an assumption, but somehow it's very difficult to imagine a bulk space-time which does not satisfy this assumption, and such that it would be homogeneous and isotropic in our brain. This would be a very contrived.
I guess that's something you have to treat, right?
But no, I think you can find some example. But this would correspond to a very contrived model, where everything you are going to do in the bulk is going, in principle, to modify what's happening in it. So this is, in some sense, this is an extra assumption. I agree with you that all the slices which are parallel to our brain, to our universe, also have the same symmetries. Yes.
Are you going to be describing an inflationary solution which produces that homogeneity, or is this sort of no. Inflation?
No. So this is, I'm going to discuss inflation at that point, at some later, but I'm not going to explain inflation which produces such an initial starting point. So this is an open question, how to get such an initial condition where we have a quasi-homogeneous brain and everything is parallel. Yes?
Aren't you throwing away a degree of freedom by setting y equals 0 and choosing this
No,
game?
No.
Let me see, I thought...
You can take a brain, you just take a brain, you define a coordinate system on the brain, then you take geodesic, special geodesic, which are orthogonal, normal to the brain. This will define y.
Yeah, I guess it depends on your boundary conditions and infinity.
So it's a local, locally, yeah. Around the brain you can do this. It's another question about the global definition of this coordinate system. Usually this coordinate system is going to break down
right.
Some distance away from
exactly.
The brain.
Yeah,
yes.
So
it's not well defined from a global point of view, but it's well defined locally.
Okay, also, you're not committing yourself to the extra dimension being finite or infinite at this point, right?
No. So far, I don't make... In fact, in the rest of my talk, I'm going to concentrate on our universe, which is located at y equals 0, and I won't really care about what's going on away from the brain. Okay? And the idea is that you can say a lot of things about what's happening in the brain, assuming the bulk around the brain is sufficiently simple, so that you don't really care about the effect of other brains or finite distance for the extra dimension. I'm going to take a specially flat metric, but you can generalize it in an obvious way to a non-flat metric. Yes. Okay. So this is the ansatz for the metric. The next step then is to try to solve the five-dimensional equations. So I have to assume, so this is the five-dimensional Einstein equation. So here I assume for generality a five-dimensional cosmological constant in the bulk. And this is the energy momentum tensor. So of course I have to assume something about the bulk. So I'm going to assume the simplest possibility for the bulk. I'm going to consider an empty bulk. So there is nothing coming from the bulk in the energy momentum tensor. And the only contribution to the energy momentum tensor comes from the brain itself. And because it comes from the brain, and the brain is located at y equals 0, you have this concentration of the energy momentum tensor, which shows up here in the delta function at y equals 0. And because of the symmetries I have assumed, the energy momentum tensor in the brain is necessarily of the perfect fluid form. So, because this is homogeneous and isotropic. So this is the energy density in the brain, the total energy density in the brain, and this is the total pressure in the brain. Okay. So then, given all these assumptions, and yes, an extra assumption which I have not... written explicitly, but that almost everybody does in this game is to assume that you have a Z2 symmetry at the level of the brain. So there is a mirror symmetry, So the space, the bulk space-time on one side of the brain is just a copy of the space-time on the other side of the brain. So I think initially this was motivated by the Orjava-Witten model, where you have this orbifold symmetry. And this is also what one finds in the Randall syndrome model. Okay, so given this assumption, one can solve explicitly the five-dimensional Einstein equation. And if one specializes the solution at the brain location, then one finds in particular a Friedman equation, something which looks like a Friedman equation, but which is not quite the usual Friedman equation. And essentially, you see that there is a term which is quadratic in the energy density, whereas in the usual Friedman equation, you have something which is linear in the energy density. Here you have also an integration constant, C, here, which appears. And here you see the bulk cosmological constant, which also appears. One can also show that given the symmetries and the fact that the bulk is empty, the usual conservation equation for the energy momentum tensor in the brain still holds. So if you want to do cosmology in the brain, forgetting about what is going on in the bulk, it's very simple. You just use this new Friedman equation, you use the conservation equation, and you can solve for the scale factor for any given type of matter. So let's consider the simplest case where lambda equals zero and C equals zero. Then the cosmological evolution in the brain is determined by the new Friedman equation and the usual continuity equation for the energy density. So if you assume an equation of state of this type, you can integrate this equation immediately, then you integrate this equation, and you get the following result, that the scale factor is a power law of the cosmic time in the brain. And the power is given by this expression. So if you take radiation, for example, in the brain, you get a scale factor which scales like t to the 1/4. And for non-relativistic matter, you get something which scales like t to the 1/3. So obviously, the cosmology is completely different from the ordinary cosmology. Yes?
I'm confused about something. If you had taken the extra direction to be compact, you might think at length scales much bigger than the compactification scale you're calling. Cosmology would go over to the standard.
Okay.
How does that
scale? Okay, so, I mean, the reason is the following. I mean, I'm going to go back to this point, but yes. It's essentially, the reason is that the bulk is Minkowski. So essentially, what you are feeling is a five-dimensional gravity. It's not the usual gravity that you are feeling here, but you are feeling the five-dimensional gravity. And of course, if you consider five-dimensional gravity and you look at what happens in the brain, you don't recover the usual laws. Yes?
I'm a little confused about the bulk. So even if lambda is zero,
yes,
it's not clear why the bulk has to be Minkowski, right? Because you have a five-dimensional vacuum solution, which you can think of as like a four-dimensional gravity plus scalar.
Yes.
And four-dimensional gravity plus scalar has lots of dynamical solutions, even with some translational symmetry.
I think with C equals zero, because we have solved explicitly the equation. So,
what is the meaning of C?
Okay, so I'm going to go back to this later. But essentially, this will correspond to the Schwarzschild mass in the five-dimensional ADS Schwarzschild metric.
When you write down these solutions, what is the time dependence for the n?
The time dependence for?
For the bulk metric.
Okay, I can show you. I will show you this later. So far, I've concentrated on the brain, but you can write explicitly the metric for the bulk itself.
So
also.
Just to show me this, pretty curious question is perhaps why is there only a one parameter of five-dimensional solutions? Why isn't there more data in the initial value of the metric as I wander away from the brain?
Okay, I'm going to come back to this later also. Okay, yes, it's a bit the same question. Okay, so this type of cosmologies obviously cannot agree with what we understand from cosmological observation. I mean, one very simple example is that you are going to spoil completely nucleosynthesis, because nucleosynthesis relies really on a balance between microphysics, the microphysics rates, and the expansion of the universe. So you cannot reconcile this type of cosmology with the evolution of the universe from nucleosynthesis till now. Before nucleosynthesis, I mean, life is rather flexible, because we don't have any cosmological data about what happened before nucleosynthesis. So you can play with cosmological evolution before nucleosynthesis, but not after. Okay, so how to get how to make a viable scenario using this very simple idea at the beginning. So essentially, and this was a reply to one of the questions, the problem here comes from the fact that you are really dealing with five-dimensional gravity and not usual gravity. And so this means that if the energy density in the brain is going to zero, you are not really dealing with usual gravity. But there is one model, which is well known to everybody, which enables you to recover the usual gravity in a brain which is in a five-dimensional bulk space-time. And this is a Randall syndrome model. So if you have a warp geometry like this, so the new ingredient is that the bulk space-time is curved. In particular, you have a non-zero cosmological constant, a negative cosmological constant. And if you assume that the brain has a tension, a kind of intrinsic tension, and you have the fine-tuning, this fine-tuning between the bulk cosmological constant and the tension, you assume the Z2 symmetry, the same as I assume, then, as you know, one solution of the Einstein equation is the following, with an exponential warping factor. So this is a brain here. This is a copy of the two bulk space-time, and the scale factor decreases exponentially with y. And that you know that in this framework, you recover the usual gravity. So the idea is very simple now. The idea is to try to generalize the Randall syndrome model to cosmology, because we know that in the limits where the cosmological energy density goes to zero, one must recover exactly the Minkowski brain of Randall syndrome. So how do we do this? So we have a bulk now with a negative cosmological constant. We assume that the brain, the energy density of the brain is made of two components. One component will be the intrinsic tension, the same tension as shows up in the Randall syndrome model, and the other part will be the usual cosmological energy density, the one which we see in the sky, or which we try to measure. So if you substitute this decomposition into the new Freeman equation I showed before, then there was a rho b square. So this rho b square is going to give you three terms, which are these three terms here. So the first term is a tension square. So if you still apply the Randall syndrome fine-tuning between the bulk cosmological constant and the intrinsic tension in the brain, you can eliminate this term. So the next term, which will be dominant for low energy density, will be the term which is linear in rho. And the term which is a term which is linear in rho just corresponds to the usual Friedmann law, where you have a dependence which is linear in the energy density. Here you have a coefficient which is not the usual 8 pi g over 3, but you can show rather easily that if you have the fine tuning between the cosmological constant lambda and sigma square, and you can show that the Planck mass, or g Newton, which is derived in the Randall-Sundrum model, which depends on lambda and sigma, is going to give you exactly the right coefficient here, so that you have the right coefficient corresponding to the usual cosmology. Yes?
I thought that you only got the right, well, at least in the Randall-Sundrum two-brain case, you only got the right freedom equation if you included stabilization of the separation.
No, here?
But is that?
Okay, so here I'm in the Randall-Sundrum two.
One-brain case now, yeah.
I mean, it's one-brain or two-brain. I don't care about the second brain.
Okay.
You see, the important point is that I'm on the positive tension brain.
Okay.
That's all I need.
Okay, there was this body of literature about getting the wrong Friedman equation without the rho term, with just the rho squared term, until you stabilize the position of the brain.
Okay, but it's different. It is in the case if you are on the negative tension brain. So if you want to solve the hierarchy problem, you have to be on the negative tension brain.
Yeah.
Then it's much more complicated to recover the usual gravity, because if in the Randall-Sundrum one model, if you are on the negative tension brain,
yes.
In this case gravity has nothing to do with usual gravity. So Randall-Sundrum one model doesn't work it's not a good model. You have to add some extra stuff to make gravity look as usual gravity. Okay. So here the important point is that I'm on the positive tension brain. But then I don't really care if there is only one brain or two brain. So I don't need any stabilization mechanism. In fact, what happens is that you have a kind of effective compactification because of the ADS length scale. You know so lambda. This lambda is minus 6 over L square, so this defines the length scale. So in fact, the usual radius of compactification that you use in Kaluza-Klein theory is replaced in this framework by the ADS length scale. And this is how you recover usual gravity. I mean, you have only one brain with a five-dimensional bulk, and the way to recover usual gravity is that you have an effective trapping, and the effective trapping is due correspond to this ADS length scale.
I think that's a different issue.
Okay. Okay. And So I stopped at the linear term. So the linear term is okay. You recover the usual linear term of standard cosmology. But here you have two new terms which are not in usual cosmology. There is this rho square term. But obviously, this rho square term is going to show up only when rho is bigger than sigma. Otherwise, this is a negligible contribution. And you also have this constant of integration C, which is here. And as you can see, this term is going to scale like radiation. So it's going to produce, from the point of view of cosmology, it's going to produce a kind of radiation, which can be called dark radiation. So this is radiation which does not correspond to any type of matter in the brain. And so here it looks like a constant of integration. In fact, as we will show later, this comes from the effect of the bulk. So this is really the effect of the bulk, which has an imprint on the brain in the form of a radiation-like matter. But there is no corresponding matter in the brain. Okay, so as I said, in this kind of cosmology, you see that there will be two regimes.
Does nuclear incidences put some bounds on C?
Yes, I'm going to come back to this. That's right. Good point. So you see in this model, there is a transition between a high energy regime, where the rho square term is dominant, rho is, and which corresponds to the case where the energy density is bigger than the tension, and the low energy regime, where the energy density is much smaller than the tension, and you recover standard cosmology. So that's good, because this means that in the very early universe, the energy density is big, and you can play with whatever you want, almost. So you can imagine a situation where in the very early universe, you have an unconventional high energy regime high energy regime, and then later you come into the standard regime.
One thing, David. Yes. If sigma is replaced by a scalar P, you know, kind of non-constant.
Okay.
I mean, in other words, even if you neglect the last two terms, you're still not having the conventional cosmology because your sigma, which is like a four-dimensional cosmological constant, has been renormalized away.
I'm not sure I understand your question.
What I mean is that this small sigma,
yes,
which is the tangent, is also the cosmological constant on the brain.
No. It's not.
It doesn't multiply
The cosmological constant that we observe.
The effective. But seen as the some vacuum energy on the brain.
So this is this total term.
Plays the role of.
Places the role of the effective and cosmological constant.
I understand. So that's what exactly what I'm saying. If you start with some sigma.
Okay. So you want to have kind of quintessence, how to make kind of, I mean.
Or inflation. I mean, suppose instead of sigma you have the V of phi.
Yeah. So you see, in this model, one important problem is the fine tuning.
Right. So what I'm saying, there is no exact fine tuning. What kind?
So there's a phase transition. Not only would you change the background cosmological constant, you would also change the effective Newton's constant, because that's the coefficient of rho.
Yes, yes, that's
so
right.
Totally different difference.
So what I'm saying is that fine tuning is fine if you have a true cosmological constant, but if you have an effective cosmological constant like in inflation, and your capital lambda is fixed, then
what would be interesting is to have a kind of effective cosmological effective tension. And then a dynamical evolution, so that you reach this fine-tuning condition. But so far, nobody has really found. I mean, it doesn't go this way usually. So you lose the fine-tuning. So No. I'm not discussing inflation. That's right. No.
In terms of wanting some effective inflation or quintessence on the brain, you can take account of that just by how you choose rho.
Ah, yeah, sure. Then you can play with rho. I mean,
that's what I'm saying. I mean, what you call sigma and what you call rho.
Because usually you need a sigma which is going to compensate the negative bulk cosmological constant. You need this term. On top of them, you can add whatever you want. Yes. So you can recover effectively quintessence models. You can have a.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
An effective cosmological constant.
You need
if you detune, yes. So. Okay. So you can, yes. So now you can solve explicitly the cosmology, and so this is the solution for the scale factor, and you see clearly in this solution the transition between the non-conventional behavior, where it scales like this, to the conventional behavior, where it scales like this. And you see that the transition time is simply the ADS length scale. And this comes back to your question. You can also get a non-zero effective cosmological constant. So you can reproduce the data we see today just by slightly detuning the tension from the bulk of cosmological constant. So you get an effective four-dimensional cosmological constant. And then you have a transition between a high energy regime into a standard regime, and then into a cosmological constant dominated regime, which is embodied in this formula. Okay, and to come back to a previous question, I don't remember from whom, this is the explicit solution for the bulk metric here. So far I've discussed only the geometry in the brain. But you can go away from the brain, and you can find the explicit metric coefficient in terms of T and Y of the extra dimension. So you can see here that if the energy density in the brain is zero, so if rho is zero, then eta is equal to one. Then you see that the hyperbolic cos minus hyperbolic sinus is going to give you the exponential of the Randall-Sundrom model. Yes?
Ask again. I'm very puzzled. I mean, I don't see why there's any unique bulk geometry given what you do on the brain. I mean, I could imagine sending in gravitational waves in the five-dimensional anti-de Sitter space
They are the symmetries. It's because of the symmetries.
Homogeneous in three dimensions and isotropic, but
yes.
With five total dimensions.
It's moving in y and t.
So it could be moving in
yes.
y and t. We certainly
okay.
have enough room for waves.
I'm going to go to this in two slides.
Incidentally, n is always normalized to 1 at y equals 0, right? It's more n. Otherwise, I don't know what.
Sorry. Ah, yes, you can always rescale the time.
Yeah, I mean, but in your conventions, I mean, otherwise A
yes.
doesn't mean the scale factor.
Yes, sure. Okay. Yes. Okay, it's, okay, maybe I can.
I thought this was the answer.
No, it's not the answer. Okay, no, it's not the answer. Not yet. Okay, so to answer another question about the, no, maybe, okay. But yes, so the question was, what are the constraints on the parameters of the model? So in this model, it's very simple to see that there are two parameters. So one is the fundamental Planck mass, the five-dimensional Planck mass. And the other parameter is the ADS length scales, which comes from the cosmological constant.
In the previous solution, did you say C equals 0?
Yeah. Yes, it was C equals 0. You can write a solution without. Yes. I'm going to come back. But this is a solution when C is 0, but you can write a more general solution when C is not 0. But I'm going to come back to this. Okay, so you have two parameters, but of course these two parameters are not independent because we measure the four-dimensional Planck mass. So there is only one real parameter. And from observation, you can see two constraints. The one constraint is that you want to recover standard evolution for cosmology from nucleosynthesis until today. So this means that when nucleosynthesis starts, you must already be in the low energy regime. So this tells you that the sigma, one fourth, must be roughly bigger than 1 MeV, which corresponds to the nucleosynthesis energy. And this gives you a constraint on the Planck mass, which is this one, 10^4 GeV. But you have another constraint, which is that you want to recover the usual Newton's law in lab experiments. And so lab experiment give you a constraint on the ADS length scale, because the ADS length scale is the scale under which you are going to see deviation from Newton's law. So now it's even smaller than 1 millimeter. It's a fraction of millimeter, 0.1 millimeter. And it turned out that the second constraint is more stringent than the first one. So you have a constraint on the five-dimensional Planck mass, which is this one. And so the tension to the force is constrained to be this. Okay, and now I'm coming to Gary's question. Okay. So in fact, so the metric which I've described in terms of this t and y coordinates, if you do a change of coordinates, you discover that this is simply an ADS Schwarzschild metric. So somehow the reason why it's unique up to this constant of integration C, which is essentially the Schwarzschild mass in the five-dimensional metric, is because of the symmetries of the problem. And this is equivalent to the Birkhoff theorem. It's because you have imposed some three-dimensional homogeneity and isotropy, which is equivalent to the spherical symmetry in ordinary GR. So in ordinary GR, you get the Schwarzschild metric, and you get the Birkhoff theorem. So this is a generalization of the Birkhoff theorem from cosmological symmetries in a five-dimensional bulk space-time. So in fact, so the metric which I had before, which apparently was dependent on both time and on the extra dimension, in fact had a hidden symmetry. So there was an extra Killing vector which was hidden in this metric, and which means that this metric is static.
Where did that extra symmetry go?
I mean, this is Birkhoff's theorem. It's the same that if you try to demonstrate Birkhoff's theorem, you assume spherical symmetry, and you assume that the metric components will be time dependent. And then at the end, you show that there is a coordinate system where there are no time dependent. And this is a Schwarzschild metric.
Is there actually a
Yes, there is a time-like Killing vector associated because it's not time-dependent.
I guess what I'm asking is that, okay, so that's
so d over dt is a Killing vector.
Okay, that's okay.
You see, because it's manifestly, yes?
Yeah, I understand what the argument now. Virchow's theorem requires a smooth horizon. And if you don't require a smooth horizon, there's still lots of solutions.
What do you mean smooth?
No, not actually, you're right.
It's local. It's a local. It's a local statement. So, it, like here, I'm just focusing on the brain and what is around the brain. So, it's a local argument. Yes.
Okay.
So, this is a new form of the metric, which is manifestly static. And of course, before, the picture was the following. Before, I had the coordinate system which was stuck at the brain. So, the brain was always at y equals zero. And the metric components were time-dependent. Now, because my metric is much simpler and it's time-independent, the price to pay is that the brain cannot be at a fixed position. So this means that in this coordinate system, the brain has to move. And it's very easy to you can write the trajectory of the brain as at the coordinate t and r. And from this metric, it will be obvious that this r here will correspond to the cosmological scale factor, because it's simply the term which multiplies the three spatial metric, the spatial three metric. So this means that the induced metric in the brain is, so the fly wants to go on the brain. So the three metric on the brain, okay, I put it back in the bulk. So the three metric on the brain is given by is just a Freeman-Robertson-Walker metric. And this is obvious because of the symmetries I imposed at the beginning. And now I can derive the Freeman equation just by applying the junction condition for these moving brains in this geometry. And so these are the junction condition in five dimensions. The spatial component gives you this relation, you square it and you get the Freeman equation. And the time-time component just gives you the usual conservation law. Okay. So this picture is completely equivalent to the previous one. It's simply given in a different coordinate system.
But that's the Freeman equation with the rho b squared, not rho b.
That's right. But rho b here is just the total energy density. Then you can play the same game and say that rho b is combined of... Yes, so this is exactly the same. Okay. So now I'm going to discuss a little bit more this constant of integration, this C, which corresponds to the Schwarzschild mass in the five-dimensional geometry. It will be a bit technical, but I'm not going to enter into all the details. But the important point so far is that I've assumed that the bulk is strictly empty. Okay. But now if you consider realistic cosmology, instead of having perfect homogeneity and isotropy, the matter will have fluctuation in the brain. So the matter fluctuations are going to produce gravitational waves in the bulk. So if you consider these gravitational waves in an average way, they will contribute to an energy momentum tensor in the bulk. And I want to compute this effect. So essentially, from a particle physicist point of view, you can see that you have an annihilation of particles which are going to produce gravitons in the bulk. And in fact, this is one way this corresponds to a kind of missing energy event, which means that you have annihilation, but you are going to lose energy because the energy is carried away by the bulk graviton. So you can compute the reaction rate of this process. So this is the details I'm going to skip. And essentially, if you put back this into cosmology, it will enter into a Boltzmann equation. So this is the energy density, the evolution of the energy density in the brain. So this is the energy density in the brain. And because you have processes between particles in the brain, which are going to produce bulk gravitons, you will have globally an energy loss. So you have escaping energy, and this energy loss is governed by this interaction, which I described before. And you can compute explicitly, as a function of the temperature, you can compute explicitly this energy loss as a function of the degrees of freedom. So it depends on the scalar vector and fermionic degrees of freedom in the brain. Okay. So another way to write it, that you have this flux going into the extra dimension, so you have an energy loss. So now this is the point of view purely from the brain. So this is a brain point of view where you have some interaction in the brain. This interaction are just seen as giving some missing energy, and this missing energy is going into the bulk. So now how to model the bulk to take into account this missing energy? So one way would be to consider. So one way to describe the full system, bulk plus radiating brain, is to use a five-dimensional Vaidya metric. Because you know that the Vaidya metric is used in general relativity to describe a star which is emitting radiation. If you want to take into account the radiation and the effect of radiation on the metric, you can describe it as a five-dimensional Vaidya metric. Here the difference is that the radiation is incoming with respect to the radius, because if you remember the Randall syndrome model, because you have a positive tension brain, the scale factor, the warping scale factor, is decreasing away from the brain. So this is equivalent to the radius. So this means that away from the brain, the radius is decreasing. Okay. So if you want to model this radiation, this outgoing radiation, you have to consider an ingoing radiation flow, which means that V is correspond to the ingoing null coordinate. Of course, this function F is given by this here, and C now is a function of V. This is no longer a constant, this is a function of V. If this function is constant, of course, you recover the ADS Schwarzschild metric. But the problem with this metric is that the energy momentum tensor corresponding to the bulk is very contrived, because it is necessarily of this form. And typically this means that the gravitons, the bulk gravitons which are emitted, have to be radial gravitons. So this is not realistic, because if you have an emission from the brain here, you will have emission in all directions. And the gravitons are not going to be only radial. Okay, so this is a very nice model to have a full picture, but this is not a realistic model. So you can consider a more general framework. So where you consider a gas of graviton, quite generally. So the energy momentum tensor associated with this gas of graviton is given by this expression. The five-dimensional equation are now this equation. So this is a brain contribution, and this is a contribution from the bulk gravitons. Then you can write some, so I'm not going to enter into this, but you can write some kind of effective four-dimensional Einstein equation. But the important point is the following. The important point is this equation, which tells you, which gives you the evolution of the dark radiation. So the dark radiation is a generalization of this C over A to the fourth term, which I had in my Freeman equation. So before C was a constant, so if C is a constant, this term is zero. But now C is no longer a constant, because I'm feeding the bulk with energy. I'm losing energy from the brain, but I'm feeding the bulk with energy. So this is a generalization for the evolution of the dark radiation. Okay. So I'm going to skip some technical details, but the picture is the following. So this is in R and T coordinates, and this is okay. So this is the evolution of the brain in the ADS geometry. So in red here, this is the brain. So this is a high energy regime for the brain, and this is a low energy regime for the brain. And here you have a few examples of bulk gravitons.
Sorry, is little r the scale factor?
So r is
distance in medium.
Yes, r is the radial. I mean the radius in ADS.
Just equivalent. To
in the static in the static geometry.
It's equivalent to a scale factor, right?
So this is equivalent to the scale factor. That's right. So it's exactly the scale the cosmological scale factor. That's right. And here, so here you have a few examples of bulk gravitons. So the blue one, which is emitted here, the green one, which is emitted at T1, and you see the problem of the problem, I mean the difficulty with this picture is that some of the bulk gravitons are going to come back onto the brain. So if you really want to see the impact, the evolution of the dark radiation from the point of view of the brain, you have to take into account the fact that some bulk gravitons are emitted, so you have an effective energy loss from the brain point of view, but some of these gravitons are going to come back and are going to interact back with the brain and leave some effects. So everything is hidden in this equation. So I'm skipping the once more the technical detail. But essentially, everything is hidden in this equation. So one part comes from the emission, so the gravitons which are being emitted. And here you can compute explicitly the component of the energy momentum tensor, because you assume some thermal distribution of matter in the brain. So you can compute explicitly the distribution of the gravitons in the bulk which are being emitted. But then some of these gravitons are going to follow geodesics and are going to strike back the brain, and are going to have an effect on the brain, which is embodied in this term here. So you cannot solve this analytically, but you can solve this numerically. And this is the evolution of the dark radiation. So this is a ratio between the dark radiation and ordinary radiation. So in this brain, we have ordinary radiation. So if dark radiation scaled exactly like radiation, this ratio would be a constant. So this is the final behavior here. So you see that at late times, so this is a scale factor, at late times, the dark radiation indeed behaves like radiation. So this means that this C coefficient, this constant of integration, is really a constant in this final regime, which corresponds to the low energy regime. So in the low energy regime, where you recover standard cosmology, dark radiation really behaves like radiation. But in the high energy regime, where the rho square term is dominant, you see that you have very strange effects. So if you start at an initial time, where the bulk is exactly empty, then because of these reactions, these processes in the brain, this will emit some bulk gravitons. These bulk gravitons are going to feed dark radiation, and you have this evolution. But you have a peak, you see. So at some point, the dark radiation can be higher than the usual radiation energy density. Even if after some time, when you go back to the low energy regime, you go back to a constant, which is smaller than the ratio is always less than one. But there is some intermediate step where you can have a very strong dark radiation in the system. Okay.
Is there something special about 1778?
I think it must be a power of something.
What happened?
This is my postdoc who did this calculation. So so there is a, he did some, maybe some square root of power of 10. I don't know. He had some strange.
But they all dip below 1 again. So is it a, do we therefore conclude we expect that the dark radiation is typically less than the actual radiation?
Okay, so this is an important question. So here, the different curves correspond to different initial energy densities.
For the dark radiation?
For the ordinary radiation. In other words, this means that if you start, increasing rho I means that you start more and more, deeper and deeper in the high energy regime. Okay? So obviously, if you start deeper and deeper in the high energy regime, you are going to produce more and more dark radiation. And then there is a constraint, as was mentioned before, there is a constraint of the nucleosynthesis. Because, so it's here. You know that nucleosynthesis gives some bounds on the number of additional degrees of freedom, which are relativistic at the time of nucleosynthesis. So this dark radiation at the time of nucleosynthesis must behave, must contribute to additional relativistic degrees of freedom. And so usually it's expressed in terms of the additional number of neutrinos. So just putting the number here, you find this relation. So if I assume this bound, the bound depends on the observation, but a typical bound would be this. So the ratio dark radiation over ordinary radiation is constrained to be smaller than this number here. And if I put in G star the degrees of freedom of the standard model, so assuming that all the degrees of freedom of the standard model are excited, then I get this value here. So now if I come back to this curve, so you see here that if I increase the initial energy density, I'm going to increase my ratio here. So the question is to which value, until which value I can go. So then there is a subtle problem, which is that there is a very subtle constellation between the effect of the gravitons which are emitted and the effects of the gravitons which come back on the brain. And this is the reason why you have this peak and then they come back, so they decrease. So there are two compensating effects. The bulk gravitons which are emitting are going to feed the dark radiation, and the bulk gravitons which are going to strike back on the brain are going to decrease the dark radiation. And it turns out that the two amounts are almost equal. And the final effect is just the small difference of these two huge numbers. So it's extremely difficult to make a numerical integration. And this is why we are able to go only up to an initial energy density of the order of 1,000. So 1,000 times the tension. Okay, so this is initial energy density in the radiation, which is 1,000 times the tension. But if you consider the bound, which is that the energy density should be less than the Planck mass to the 4, then you see that the ratio which is allowed is 10 to the 20. So there is much, much room to go to higher initial energy density and to have an increase in this curve. So the question mark is, to which value can you reach here? So you see that if you can go above the nucleosynthesis bound, so this would mean that the nucleosynthesis constraint tells you that a long period of high energy regime is forbidden. It could tell you a constraint. Or maybe you can go to 10 to the 20 and you are still below the nucleosynthesis bound. It's an open question. And it's really a very subtle effect in the numerical calculation. So we are unable to find a way to get around this problem. So if anybody has an idea, it's most welcome.
This balance?
Sorry?
I didn't understand. Why is there this balance?
is bound?
Balance.
Okay. I don't know, in fact. I don't know.
But you can see all the equations.
Yes, you can see all the equation. And,
analytically?
Not really analytically. This is a problem because there is a time delay, you know. Because you start first with an empty bulk, so you emit a lot of bulk gravitons. So the emission component will be very, very big at the beginning. Then these gravitons are going to strike back later. So the main contribution from the gravitons striking back will be later. So there is really a time delay between the two effects. So even numerically, you could find a kind of a trick. If they were at the same time, you could find a trick to average or to eliminate it before doing the computation. But there is a time delay between the two effects. So I don't see any easy way to get around this.
I just want to understand why the bulk gravitons come back. So to zero value, you might think the emitted bulk gravitons fall into the ABS black hole.
Mm-hmm.
But then I guess some of them backscatter off the geometry and come back. Is that what's going
on?
Well, doesn't the brain itself fall into the black hole?
It's moving away, I think. As time increases, it's going to
go. Yes, the radius is increasing because the scale factor is increasing. But yes, this is because of the geometry. Because of the ADS geometry, the gravitons are going to be deviated and they can come back.
If I just thought about it in just five dimensions, you know, I have some gravitational potential due to the black hole and this.
I don't know. I've not. Okay, we can discuss this to see if we can understand it in another way.
But is the model so clear cut that you can cast this small effect?
Which small effect?
The one effect left over by the cancellation. In other words, you say that the lack of an exact cancellation may be due to some lack of precision in the model.
It would be a lack of precision in the numerical integration.
No, I thought the model itself, you think, is crystal clear.
Yes.
Nothing to do with it. It's not the model. It's clear.
Yes, so...
An exact calculation. The equations are exact.
Yes, the idea is that you average over all the gravitons. So you have to deal with the gravitons as a gas of gravitons. But the distribution then is clearly given by the thermal distribution. You have a thermal distribution in the brain of particles. So you can compute the distribution of the Kaluza-Klein modes in a generalized sense, which correspond to the graviton, to the bulk gravitons. And then you use the Liouville equation saying that the gravitons are going to propagate along geodesics in the bulk. So this is basically...
There are also corrections to the production mechanism.
Yeah, that's
like two psi goes to GG, where it's presumably smaller.
Okay, do you mean if the next... okay, yes, but I would suspect that this would be an extra correction to this term. I don't see...
Yeah,
yes, no, I understand your point. Okay, I have to think... I don't know. Okay, yes. But you see, because then the gravitons, once emitted, even if by these corrective processes, they will follow the same type of trajectory in the bulk. They are not going to behave differently from the other ones, from the first ones.
But the rate of production would be slightly changed.
When they fall, by falling back, what do you mean? They fall back and disappear in the brain?
When they come back to the brain?
Yeah.
Now, okay, so, yes, I forgot to mention this. They are reflected by the brain world. So, in principle, there should be a kind of inverse process that some of the gravitons would be absorbed in. But I think this effect should be small. So we did not include this effect. So we assume that the bulk gravitons are just reflected by the brain. And this is why you saw in the picture that they are just coming again several times. Okay, so... Yes, yes, that's right. So it's two copies.
So you don't have a single ADS black hole in the brain moving in the background. You have
on the two sides. You have this on the two sides.
But
that only makes it worse as far as I'm concerned. I would have thought otherwise things emitted toward infinity, you know, might have been tending to pull back toward the brain. Now on both sides are just going to fall into the horizon. So I'm with Senga. I'm confused as to why most of them come back.
The gravity on the one side would still be affected both black holes.
So it's just a sport show they get black hole. Well, they won't know about it.
I mean, the only effect of the Z2 symmetry will be, once the gravitons are produced, they are just filling the ADS geometry. Right? But, I mean, the Z2 symmetry will enter in when the bulk graviton strikes back, the brain is going to be reflected. So this is the effect of the Z2 symmetry. I don't think that. Yes?
Can you talk a bit about
But I have to correct something. In fact, the brain here is not It's not moving in ADS Schwarzschild geometry. To simplify the problem, we have considered only the brain moving in ADS geometry. So we don't include the back reaction of the Schwarzschild mass building up into the geometry. So you see the bulk gravitons and the brain are moving in the pure ADS geometry. So initially the bulk is empty with ADS geometry. Then you are going to send bulk gravitons. So these bulk gravitons are going to build up a kind of Schwarzschild mass. But we ignore the back reaction. We take into in our calculation, in our numerical calculation, because it would be much more difficult, we consider only the evolution of the brain in the IDS geometry and the evolution of the bulk graviton in the IDS geometry.
I still don't understand. There still is a horizon.
So
gravitons just go down the IDS.
Maybe
IDS, they always come back. You wait on.
Okay, but maybe,
no, you're not talking about the wall. You're talking about down the throat.
But you know, this is a convergence in ADS. You have a convergence that all the geodesics are going to come back.
Well, your brain is flat, so you're moving along some sort of Poincaré patch.
Yeah,
right?
That's what I mean.
Your brain goes out to infinity. It doesn't oscillate and come back.
And everything goes down the Poincaré horizon. And it's just
I know. Maybe we can discuss this afterwards because I'm running out of time. I wanted to mention another connection to observations. So just one word about inflation in the brain, because this was one of the questions. So in this very simple picture, there have been essentially two ways to do inflation, brain inflation in this framework. So one way is to consider bulk inflation. So you have a bulk scalar field, and inflation in the brain is then induced by this bulk scalar field. A simpler way to do brain inflation is just to consider a four-dimensional scalar field which is confined in the brain. And then it's very similar to the usual calculation, except that the Friedmann equation is modified. So the results of this calculation are the following. So you can compute the scale, the spectra for the scalar and the tensor modes from this type of inflation. So for the scalar modes, it's very easy because this is the usual h square over phi dot to the square. The only difference is that the h square, the dependence of h square on v is different because the Friedmann equation is modified. So you have this corrective term. So you see that if inflation takes place in the low energy regime, where V is much smaller than sigma, this corrective term is 1. So you recover the standard result. If inflation takes place in the high energy regime, then you have a correction factor here. You can also do the same calculation for the tensor modes, but then it's a bit more subtle. Because the gravitational waves, you have to take into account the five-dimensional picture. So essentially, the result is the following. The result is the usual result, V over M Planck to the fourth, times a corrective term. And in fact, you can understand this corrective term as saying that you compute an effective Planck mass. You see, if in the Randall-Sundrum model, the quickest way to recover the usual four-dimensional Planck mass is just to integrate on the extra dimension, and you have the warping factor. So this is a warping factor which is going to give you m5 to the 3 times L. So if you do the same during inflation, so if you have a quasi-de-Sitter inflation, the warping factor will not be the warping factor of Randall-Sundrum. It will be a warping factor which is corrected, as I showed before, with hyperbolic cosinus and sinus. So if you do the integration, you get a new Freeman, you get a new Newton's constant, which is different from the Minkowski Newton's constant, and this gives you this factor. Okay, so it's a way to understand where it comes from. So of course, for low energy you recover, this is one, and for high energy, this behaves like H times L. So this means that at high energy, the two spectra, the amplitude of the two spectra is enhanced with respect to the usual results of four-dimensional inflation. However, if you compute the ratio tensor over scalar, you see that this is enhanced by a power of 3, and this is enhanced by a power of 2 only. So this means that the ratio tensor over scalar in fact decreases in the high energy regime. So it's bad news for people who are trying to see gravitational waves from the CMB experiments, for example. I mean, if this is a real life, then it will be still harder.
To answer, we had a discussion about transpikian physics,
mm-hmm.
where the arguments were made that all of like little steps, H over big.
Yes.
Here, in fact, it might be in these brain scenarios that five.
Okay,
down.
Yes, okay. Yes, yes. So you can.
What the hell?
Okay, I don't know the answer, but yes, one should reconsider this Planck effect, sub-Planck effect in this case.
Where correction to the effective Planck mass does not show up in the scalar?
Okay, so the idea is that here you have, I mean, because the scalar field is confined, yeah. You have a delta function. So when you integrate on the volume, the delta function is going to strike. When you consider gravitational waves, I mean, they have some, they're spread on the five dimensional. So you have to, when you integrate to get the volume, they will it will appear. So this is the origin of the effect. Yes.
Those have not been obtained assuming essentially a certain metric given by the Friedman equation on the brain and perturbing this metric, not perturbing the five dimensional metric. Is that correct?
Okay.
Those results are actually being obtained perturbing the five dimensional metric and then computing the scalar perturbation on the brain.
So I can answer, for example, for the tensor mode, which are the simplest modes. So in this case, what we have done is really to consider the spectrum of, I mean, so you consider the five-dimensional gravitational waves, and you can separate these five-dimensional gravitational waves into the so-called zero mode, which corresponds to the zero mode of Randall and Sundrum. I mean, they're different because you are in quasi-de-Sitter. And you have Kaluza-Klein modes. You have massive modes. Because, yes, the important point is that during the Sitter or De-Sitter phase, the equation of motion, the wave equation for the tensor mode, is separable between the time and the extra dimension. This is like in the Minkowski case. In the Randall-Sundrum case, what is very nice is that you have a separation between the extra dimension, the equation, the wave equation is separable between the extra dimension and time. This is the same in De-Sitter. This is no longer the same when you consider realistic cosmological evolution. So during radiation era and matter era, you don't have this property. But during the Sitter phase, you have this property. So what we computed is we computed the zero mode, and this is the result for the zero mode. But then there is a gap between you are in the Sitter. There is a gap between the zero mode and the continuum of massive modes. So this is not like in Randall syndrome. In Randall syndrome, you have a zero mode, and then you have a continuum of massive Kaluza-Klein mode starting from zero. In the case of the sitter, you have a zero mode, but then you have a continuum of Kaluza-Klein mode which starts at a higher value. So you have a gap. So this means that during inflation, these massive modes are not going to be excited, because the value of the gap is of the order of the Hubble parameter. So you can excite only modes with a mass which is smaller than the Hubble parameter. So because of the all the masses of the Kaluza-Klein modes are of the order of the Hubble parameter, above the Hubble parameter, you cannot excite them. Yes?
When I look at our effective physics today, what's the gap to the five-dimensional physics? It sounds like it comes at a rather low scale.
But from a cosmological point of view, you cannot define.
No, I mean, from me sitting in the laboratory doing gravitational experiments.
Yes.
You have. It's not. I mean, if you're modifying cosmology at the nuclear physics scale, that sounds like these things. That's 3 minutes.
So you
it
see.
Sounds like you have a three light years.
This is a scale. So h is the current h, and l must be lower than 0.1 millimeter. So this is essentially the ratio between the ADS length scale, which is smaller than a fraction of millimeter, and the Hubble scale today. So it's very small.
But you are modifying gravity at the nuclear scale.
Long before.
Well, you're back in four-dimensional gravity.
If you remember my two constraints, I had two constraints, yes. One from nucleosynthesis, yes. And one from Newton's law, which was much more stringent than the first one. So this means that it's modified long before nucleosynthesis. Okay, it's almost time for cookies, so I have to finish. Okay. So I'm going to skip, yes. I can just show this slide, just to show you that it's a difficult problem to consider perturbation, then the full evolution of perturbation. Because during inflation, as I said, this is a quasi the sitter. For slower inflation, this is a quasi de Sitter phase, where the wave equation is separable. But then if you want to consider the full evolution, it's much more complicated. And because this is a really two-dimensional problem. In usual cosmology, you do a Fourier decomposition, and you have only an ordinary differential equation. Here, you have partial differential equation. So it's a much more complicated problem. Okay. And this is my summary. Okay. So the first kind of general statement that the brain neural ID can be tested in different ways. So as always, cosmology is the most indirect way, but it might be the only way if the scales involved, which means the five-dimensional Planck mass is big, then cosmology will be the only way. So there is really this idea that the generalization of the Randall syndrome cosmology is a very useful, because it's a simple toy model. I mean, here we have been discussing a lot about models which are motivated by string theory. I mean, I think a model motivated by string theory would involve many more ingredients than just this very simple picture. But from the point of view of a cosmologist, this is really a kind of first step to learn to work with this kind of problems. And okay, and so to summarize the homogeneous cosmology, there are two new features, which is the rho square term in the generalized Freeman equation, and a dark radiation term, which is fed during the high energy regime and which is constrained by nucleosynthesis. Then there is a problem of cosmological perturbation, which is much more difficult. Okay, thank you.
Any other questions?
The problem of the graphitrons going out and coming back, that was just in the ADS bulk, or?
Yes, just in the ADS bulk. Okay. So the picture I showed was just in the ADS picture.
Okay, so those calculations, how you perturb the bulk and solve the linearized equation in the bulk? And
so you just consider the geodesic, because the bulk graviton is following a geodesic, a null geodesic in the bulk. So you just compute, so the trajectories for the bulk gravitons are just the geodesic, the null geodesic in the space-time, in the IDS space-time.
I'm just trying to like fit it with the Wheeler picture where you perturb the bulk and solve the linearized equations and then use the matching conditions to
okay.
Impose constraints.
Yes, now there is a difference because in this case we are interested only in the homogeneous cosmology. So we average the effect of the bulk gravitons.
Okay, okay. So you're assuming that they don't affect the geometry.
So we are ignoring the perturbation.
Okay.
We average over all the bulk gravitons so that there is no perturbation.
Okay.
And it has an impact only on the homogeneous cosmology.
Okay.
It's really an average effect. So essentially it's an average of HH,
okay.
Which is so we ignore the linear perturbation effect.
Any questions? All right, let's think of these.